Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Pan. And I am profoundly grateful to be with you on this sixth day of February 2021. I got to get a new opening, huh? Same one all the time, but I am grateful. I really am, and I am profoundly grateful that you take the time to listen to me, and I'm hoping that you understand how much that means to me and hopefully to you as we explore what is going on within us a little bit, as we take a look at the meaning and the significance of our life, which is important. Today we're going to work on believing, and I get a lot of emails about if I believe this and if a person believes that and how belief might manifest into the hopes and dreams that people have about what they want in their life. And I thought, well, you know, okay. So it is assumed, and I mean deeply assumed, that one's belief has something to do with the state of a person's faith. And we have these belief systems, and if you have enough belief in whatever it is that you dream about or that you want, that somehow this whatever being, this God that most people believe in, as a Wizard of Oz or something, will grant the wish and make things happen. I looked up the word belief, something one accepts as true or real, firmly held, now get this, opinion or conviction, okay? That is something I think we need to look at, because just because I have shall we say, a firmly held opinion or conviction doesn't mean that that is necessarily the truth. I could believe that, you know, fairies exist and pigs fly and all sorts of things. You can believe in anything, frankly, and that doesn't make it real and that doesn't make it true. So we have this thing, faith. Let's do belief in, trust, faith, our confidence in someone or something. And then it goes into politics, and I don't do politics. I don't like them. So there you are. You have everything you need here on belief. What is your belief? Does belief lead to some sort of faith, or do we get what we want if we believe enough? And what does that mean? I remember being a kid and being told, if you believe enough, things will come true. Well, how do you believe enough? I mean, what is the criteria for that? Is that, you know, just desire and pride and ambition and emotionality? Is that what we're talking about? And then people have this idea of a belief system, which is a bunch of tenets put together as a basis for some philosophy or moral code or religion. We have all sorts of stuff around the word belief. And the idea is that if we have enough belief, we'll get what we want. And let's go to our questions now. The first one comes from Elgin. He does not tell me where he lives. I believe in I believe in being practical, he says. My belief is in the world. What do you say about that, Elgin? Well, I don't know what to, you know, I guess you're challenging me. I don't know. I really don't know what you're doing. But what do I say about believing in the world? I am saying the world is based on the prejudice of bias, on the perception of bias. So not everything that we see that is in and of the world is the way things really are. We have to look beyond the circumstances and the conditions and get down to the core. If you want to be practical, and I don't know what you mean by practical, this is a word that is, shall we say, one more perception, bias, how you interpret it and how you paint a picture around it, I don't know. So, Elgin, I don't know exactly what your peculiarities are around the word belief. But let me give you a little story, okay? And this story is one that I always use when it comes to perception is reality. And that's, to me, what your question is about. Whatever you think you see, then you can believe in. In other words, seeing is believing. And you're from Missouri, you know, license plate saying seeing is believing. So let me give you the story. There was this very, very wealthy king who was looking for the perfect archer. He wanted to defend his country, blah, blah, and he thought he needed the perfect archer to do this. And he thought if he found him, then he would train his other archers and he would have a better army. So they heard about this man who lived in a very dangerous forest who was the perfect archer. And they went in search of him. And they looked and looked and looked for weeks. And finally, they found a grove of trees where there was a target on the tree. And there was an arrow in the bullseye, dead in the bullseye, all over, hundreds of trees like this, hundreds. And they thought, oh, they had found the perfect archer. So what do? They look around, they start searching, and they find this elderly man sitting under a tree with a couple of cans of paint and a whole mess of arrows just sitting there. And they walked over to him and they said, are you responsible for all of these, you know, trees with the bullseye? He said, yes, I am. And they said, are you the perfect archer? And he said, no. And they said, well, how can you be responsible for all of these bullseyes and not be responsible? He said, well, what I do is I paint first the bullseye on the tree, and then I stick the arrow in. And that's the way most of us are. We have an opinion, like the definition said, and we think in terms of that definition being the belief that we can hold in our minds, the kind of belief that appeals to our genetics, our emotionality, which is born out of our genetics. And we think that we can see what to believe in based on the perception of our genetic heritage, and that is going to define us for the rest of our life, or define the situation, whatever, and that is the truth of any given thing. So we paint the bullseye first that we think we know, and then we stick the arrow in with whatever is the situation, and come up with the idea that this is true. And that's how we live our life. And you can't change a person's perception. Once a person, I have found in my work, once a person believes and actually thinks that whatever they're thinking is true, no matter what, no matter how untrue it may be, or out of kilter, they won't believe it because of pride and vanity, and also the emotional pull, that conjecture for, shall we say, hate or fear. We're always looking, Elgin, for hate and fear, and a reason to have hate and fear in our life. We love it, and we love to be contrary for the sake of just being contrary. We think that makes us cool or different or whatever. So we have all of this stuff going on constantly inside of our brain. We don't know that this is going on. We have no self-awareness. We're not particularly interested in self-awareness. So we have all this stuff going on in our thinking, and we think, well, gee, what my perception is based on what I believe, and what I believe is what I see, and what I see is what is real. And that's as far as we go. We don't go any further. We don't go any deeper. We don't look at life from another point of view. We have no interest in another point of view. We have no interest in anything except that our perception is the reality of whatever we are seeing. So that's what we base our belief on. And I can't talk you out of that. You know, for years I would stand in front of audiences who had a perception of what was to be believed. And they had a perception of me as the person that is going to say to them, your perceptions are correct. But I never did. And it was useless. You don't help people by endearing them to their prejudices. You really don't. And that's what they wanted me to do. That's what ministers are all about, endearing people to accept their prejudices as belief, as the truth. And if you do that and you do it well, you can make a lot of money. But if you don't do it well, or you try to show them what the process is of belief, you're going to find that people don't like that. They like the standard, kind of pedestrian mentality that most people have. And you can relate to more people through that shared belief of whatever and be a part of the crowd and make yourself feel at home with the collective unconscious and all of that other stuff. So I'm not a belief guy, okay? In the traditional sense, I don't do any believing thing. In the traditional sense. In the untraditional, in the part of me that is really real, I have another sense of the whole thing. And that is, you can trust what you can see when you can see beyond what you think. And if you can do that, which any of us can, should we choose to practice, then you have authentic belief. But right now, the way most people are, Elgin, and maybe the way you are, I don't know. I doubt if that's a possibility. I just doubt it. So there you are, my friend. I wish you well. I hope one day that this little chat I had with you will come to fruition within you and help you. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next question. This is from Ellen, and she does not tell me where she lives. I believe I'm worth more than this world appreciates. How do I get the world to appreciate me? Ellen. Well, you got to be worth something to everybody. That's you got to send out your belief. You believe that you're worth more than the world appreciates. Well, okay. What is that belief? What is that worth? Tell me. And why did you put your whole life into this kind of belief? I often look at people when I'm doing session work, and I ask myself, as they're blithering out their beliefs and their theories and their philosophies, how did you basically come to this? How did you come to the belief that you're a this or a that, or that whatever it is you're believing in is true? It may appear to be true to people. It is often very interesting, and I think this is why we have such a difficult time going into third person and having self-observation. I think it's very difficult for us to see ourselves and to see what we really are, not what we think we are. We have a real hard time with that. Really, really difficult. I mean, you look at your life, you look at the things that you've done, you've said, you have your own way of whitewashing yourself. You hear part of what you say, not all what you say. You think you're talking about your intent, and you're doing your intent, you're speaking about your intent, and you're very clear about it. But then, you know, other people aren't clear about your intent, or they don't share your quote unquote belief system, whatever, you know, tenets and principles you think you have. You are hovering around a kind of the culmination of a basis for your own philosophy, your own moral code, you know, things like that. Boy, this gets complicated. And then before you know it, you have a completely different point of view of yourself than the one you might be really living in, the real philosophy, the real moral code, the real whatever tenets. You look at it and you go, whoa, what is about you that you can believe in? That you're schizophrenic? That you're bipolar? That you're a sociopath? Narcissist? What do you believe in? How do you know that what you believe in is not only what you believe in as authentic, but that it is something that is valuable to other people? You want other people to appreciate you? I guess. I mean, that's what you're saying. You say, I believe I'm worth more than the world appreciates. Well, how does that work? If the world doesn't appreciate it, it's not worth anything to the world. To the world. Maybe to you. Maybe to me. Maybe I'd see it and I'd go, wow, you know, Ellen has got something very beautiful going on there. I could buy that, you know, something beyond the scope of her persona and personality. I could buy that. I could. But to believe that you're more than what they say you are and to be fighting that fight, I think it's a waste of time, Ellen. I think you must live whatever it is that you think is so valuable about yourself and let it be obvious. And if people get it, they get it. And if they appreciate it, they appreciate it. And if they don't, they don't. And you don't worry about it, because if you really know that this is the truth of you, why worry about it? It must be something very beautiful. It must be something authentic. So you go with that and you live in that and you make love possible through that. And that's all there is to say. If you need other people to say, oh, Ellen, yeah, but blah, 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 you're a this, you're a that, we appreciate, you're going to miss. And I don't think there's any real sincerity in that, but arrogance and the emperor of all malice inside of us working the poison of its malice in our life. I don't think you should be looking at others to determine how valuable you are, no matter what your beliefs are. Don't go there. It is typical of people to think in terms of they're more valuable, they're more special than people appreciate. And this could be very true. And then again, it could be nothing but blarney. And I don't know what it is with you because I don't know you. But if what you're saying is true, your light will shine. And it will shine through everything that you do and everything that you say. And you're going to find there will be those, if it's an unusual light, there will be those who gravitate towards it and appreciate it in great beauty. Or they won't. I don't think Jesus was deeply appreciated. I don't think the Buddha was deeply appreciated. I don't think Gandhi was deeply appreciated. I don't think anyone of any caliber of enlightenment was or is deeply appreciated in this world, because they are showing the dimness of people just by the sheer utter light of their heart and going about their day, diffusing light and doing beautiful things with their livingness. So I really wouldn't get too crazy about what other people think of you. I did a series you might be interested in, Ellen, called Nobody Likes You Anyway. You can see it on the website at aspire.org. It will answer a lot of your questions here about no matter how sweet or kind or how authentic you are, nobody likes you anyway. No matter what you do, everybody is a critic and everybody has their opinions and their beliefs, and they're not going to give those up because you show some light and love. They're just not going to do it. So there you are. I wish you well, Ellen, and I hope this helped you. And I hope you are very special. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question is from Rob in Colorado. And he asks, the world is my life, and I believe in the world. So why is it so difficult to live my life, Rob? Well, you answered your own question, Rob. This is a very difficult world. It's more difficult now than I think ever before. I really do. I think it's just a very, very, very difficult world. We have a lot of people with a lot of opinions and a lot of beliefs, and you believe that, you know, your world is the world everybody else thinks is their world, and you're wrong. Everybody has their own world that they live in. It is amazing to me to watch people run through their life and think that they know what their world is all about, what they're all about, and what living is all about. It just cracks me up to think that everybody thinks they know. None of us know. It is best not to know. It is best not to believe. It is best, if you want to cultivate faith, real faith, you can't do it through belief. You will never, never do it. Belief is something that you surrender to your mind to appease it. And it's just a concept, and everything that you believe in gets tarnished by the whole idea of impermanence in this world, because everything in this life changes and is impermanent. So if you're trying to cultivate faith through belief, you're going to be a very frustrated person. Faith is something totally different than belief and has nothing to do with belief. Faith is a mind that is no longer shackled by emotionality, shackled by belief. A faithful mind has no belief whatsoever. It is a psychology that goes beyond psychology. It is a way of thinking beyond the ideals of thinking. It is a mind that is no longer thinking anymore. It is strictly into the direct experience. And you can have these moments inside yourself that are so utterly divine and beautiful at any time. And I'm sure everyone listening to my voice at one time or another had a faith, just for a moment, a brief moment of divine insight that lives profoundly in the authentic heart, not the human heart, the authentic heart. Everybody has had that brief, brief moment. And you think, what is that? What was that? There are parts of us that absolutely are faithful, but we cover them up with the whole idea of precepts, concepts, bias, and fear. And so with that all being said, we can't hold our water very well when it comes to the idea of having a profound sense of what it means to have faith, which I think for me has been the most beautiful thing in my life ever. And once it's discovered, you can have it forever. You can. You can have it forever. And it will never leave you, because you will never leave it. It is immensely beautiful. And you don't need other people to endorse you. And that's very, very important, because once you understand nobody likes you anyway, you start to wake up to your own idea of perception is reality. And all of a sudden, there is only the reality without the perception. And that is an amazing and distinct moment of goodness in you. It's just very, very wonderful. I hope that helped you. I really do. I'm out of here. Thank you so much, Rob, for your question. Thank you, all of you, for your questions. I'll be back on the air tomorrow. If you have any questions on your own, you can always email me at greg@aspire.org. Later. Have a beautiful one. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.